All right, Jennifer Winkler, on behalf of Mr. Curtis Rogers, Jr., I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. Insufficient evidence support Mr. Rogers' conviction as charged by the state and as the jury was instructed in this case. Now, the jury was instructed on witness tampering only as follows: that Mr. Rogers attempted to induce a witness or person he has reason to believe is about to be called as a witness in any official proceeding to testify falsely. Now, the brief of appellant tracks some of the previous case law and refers to this as the A prong, but it's really the first part of 9A72120 section 1 combined with the A prong, which is the testify falsely. So authority from this court, which has been briefed, the 1980 Pella case requires an ongoing official proceeding. That is,
is it ongoing or is it pending?
Pending, yes.
That, isn't that the language that Pella uses?
Yeah, that there needs to have been an information filed.
And so your argument is we must follow Pella.
You must follow Pella. It's not wrong. Regardless of the state's authority yesterday, I think we're getting a little bit meta as far as the whether we can, as the kids say, as as far as the authority on when we can when this court can overrule precedent.
Well,
now there's a dispute on that.
Well, I don't know if there's a dispute, but you know, even if we don't overrule it, we could disagree with it. So your argument is we shouldn't disagree with it. This is a correct analysis. And and so the Pella Court cites North Dakota. The Pella Court cites the Ninth Circuit. The federal statute's different.
Right.
What happened in that North Dakota case, I'm not sure, helps much. So what?
Well, for North Dakota purposes, let's go to North Dakota. For North Dakota,
well, before you go to North Dakota, are you abandoning the Ninth Circuit?
Because the Ninth Circuit had a clear rule.
It had a different statute. Different statute.
It's an obstructing, but obstructing has changed over the time.
Very different language, does it not?
The current statute does, but the version back in 1972 was actually obstructing, and it was more similar to what our witness tampering and witness intimidation is now. So if you look at the current statute, it seems like some of the language has been moved to another provision that has more to do with witness intimidation. So it's actually quite similar. And the way that Pella cited it was an EG, like, hey, this is the consensus around the country.
Well, they only cite two. They only cite two cases for their EG, so we don't know what else they were thinking about.
Well, they cite a federal case and a state case, so maybe they think they're being magnanimous.
And a leading jurisdiction in North Dakota.
It was a different time.
Here, though, where you're encouraging criminal defendants who've been arrested to get a hold of the witnesses before the prosecutor gets to the courthouse. You're encouraging the prosecutor, in essence, to race to the courthouse with an information before the police have conducted a complete investigation in order to make the statute apply.
That's absolutely not the case, Your Honor. Under this prong, sure, but there's a whole other prong that the legislature added in, I think, 1982, and then we have 1994, the legislature seeming to note that this investigation prong is something that can be relied on by the state to charge just that situation. When it under Section 201, they actually refer to the Rempel case, which doesn't have a lot to do with this case. Section 201, Chapter 1973, Laws of 1994 says not just current proceedings, but future proceedings are also important. It's important to stop this kind of behavior. So it says, okay, so we're talking about a future proceeding. That seems to recognize the Pella case, and there's this other prong for cases under investigation, and that was charged in this case, but due to the strange things that happened below, that got thrown out by the court, and that decision was not appealed. The state did not appeal that decision. So we have a situation where there was a prong, and the state acknowledges this in their brief, that could have covered Mr. Rogers' behavior and speech in this case, but it was not charged, or it was charged, but the jury was not instructed on it. So,
and the jury was not instructed because of the decision the trial court made?
That's correct. But which was not appealed, Your Honor. So I'm going to go over my time if that's all right. So we have...
How much do you want to go over your time?
Just a minute. The Pella case, the legislature, if we're looking at whether it's wrong, let's say that we're under a stalker case, which is the case that I, you know, thought I was entitled to rely on. When I briefed the reply brief, the stalker case says that we're going to be following the Stranger Creek harmful and incorrect standard, but let's just assume incorrect. So is Pella incorrect? Well, the legislature doesn't appear to have thought so, because the legislature has amended the statute three times since the Pella case. They added something that, as Judge Leach indicated, might cover Mr. Rogers' speech in this case. There's no race to the courthouse necessary. And so they've not referred to the case. They've done nothing to amend it. So what we have is a bright line rule since 1980, and the state is asking to overrule it and really not indicating why it's incorrect or harmful, assuming that's necessary.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Kristen Relier, Deputy Prosecuting Attorney for King County, representing the state of Washington. This court should affirm Mr. Rogers' conviction. First, I'd like to start out by explaining why Pella is distinguishable, and then turn to why, if this court disagrees that it's distinguishable, it should not follow Pella. So starting with why Pella is distinguishable. In Pella, there was not a proceeding pending at the time of the defendant's threat.
Well, the same is true here.
Well, my position is actually the opposite. Our argument is that there was a proceeding pending, that Mr. Rogers...
There was no information filed.
There was no information filed. But when you look at the RCW that defines official proceeding, it defines it as a proceeding heard before a judicial official authorized to hear evidence under oath. And the first appearance hearing that Mr. Rogers... clearly was anticipating. He had an offender score of 11, so he wasn't new to the system, and he was telling his girlfriend on Monday a no-contact order is going to be imposed, and we're going to have to start using AKAs and anonymous names.
The no-contact order he's referencing is a condition of his anticipated release?
It could be a condition of his release, yes.
What else would it be? Was there some other proceeding?
Well, the proceeding would be the first appearance hearing, because he was booked in on a Saturday night after midnight.
He was arrested by an officer and booked in and had a first appearance hearing, but there wasn't an information filed. Was there any criminal complaint filed in a court of limited jurisdiction?
No, there was not a complaint filed.
Is there anything that one could have found in the court system records to tell it that Mr. Rogers had something coming up?
Yes, I do believe that. I do believe that when someone's booked in, you can call the jail for information.
To the court system. Not
oh, okay.
The jail
okay.
Is there something? If I'd gone down to the courthouse and asked them to search their records, what can you tell me about some place Mr. Rogers is going to be showing up in the next few days? Would they have had anything that would have told them that Mr. Rogers was coming?
Well, as a deputy that's handled the jail calendar, I mean,
the judge gets a copy of the jail calendar, but is there anything in the court before the jail brings these folks over for their first appearance?
They get entered into the system that the court uses, but I agree with you that there's not a complaint filed. There's not an information filed.
There's no court proceeding.
There is. That is correct, yes. But the statute...
What's wrong with counsel's argument that you're just under the wrong prong of the statute? There's a prong that addresses what Mr. Rogers was charged with. You charged him with that, but you were not allowed to get to the jury on that because of a trial court ruling you haven't appealed.
Well, I would just...
First of all, does it apply? We're talking about withholding from a law enforcement agency information that's relevant to the criminal investigation.
Right.
That's the prong we're talking about. So you did chart. That is part of the charge. What happened during the trial?
Okay. And I think this will partly answer your question, too, Judge Leach. is the statute's a little bit confusing because some of the language is redundant. And so the state here charged under every prong of the statute. But then when the Mr. Rogers trial counsel brought a constitutional challenge to prong 1C, which is the withhold from law enforcement information, then the state dropped that theory.
Well, and, arguing what?
Arguing.
What did defense counsel argue?
He argued that it was overbroad. And that
so
there,
you didn't let the state didn't let the trial court rule on that issue and instead voluntarily dismissed that account to avoid having the court rule on that issue.
Yes. And given the evidence here, I believe that was appropriate. When I made my point about redundancy, I was just trying to point out that in the
I don't think we're going to follow the logic that everything the legislature said was redundant. So why don't you move on to a different argument?
Oh, yes. Okay, I will. So here, Pella is distinguishable because the critical distinction is that Mr. Rogers...
Well, before you talk about Pella's distinguishable, it seemed to me in Pella that the crux of the determination rested on pending. Is that language that's used in the statute?
No. The statute, RCW 9A72-0104, just says a proceeding before a judicial official authorized to hear evidence. And my position is that a first appearance hearing is that, and certainly a trial is too.
Well, we're talking about an official proceeding, so now you're back to where you were in response to Judge Leach and trying to cobble together some sort of official proceeding before the complaint is charged.
Well, our argument is that this is different than Pella because Mr. Rogers had been arrested. He was in custody. He knew that there was going to be a first appearance hearing in 2 days. He knew an official proceeding was coming, and that's very different than the defendant in Pella, who, when he made his threat, he hadn't been arrested, he wasn't in custody, he wasn't awaiting any first appearance hearing. He had no reason to believe that there would be an official proceeding.
Let's assume that, started a different way. It seems to me the problem with what you're arguing is that Pella says numerous cases have held that an official proceeding begins at the earliest with the filing of a complaint. So if we're not going to apply that, if we're going to distinguish Pella on the basis that you're asking us to, we've got to find that Pella was wrong on saying that. And if we find that Pella is wrong saying that and accept your manner of distinguishing it, then we can not follow Pella on the main issue. Guess what I'm getting at? There doesn't seem to be any way to get around. We don't follow Pella on one thing or we don't follow it on the other in order to come out the way you're asking.
Well,
that's an invitation to tell us why Pella was wrongly decided.
Based on the two cases it was citing.
Right, based on the North Dakota and the Ninth Circuit.
So why don't you address that?
I'd be happy to. I do believe that Pella was wrongly decided. The North Dakota case and the Ninth Circuit case, I don't want to get us too bogged down in the facts, but they're different cases. They're based on different statutes. They're not based on Washington statute. I believe that the Pella case is incorrect because it fails to recognize that an official proceeding could be pending prior to an information being filed, the first appearance hearing, which is why I keep coming back to that.
Are there any other reasons why Pella is wrongly decided?
Well, to me, that's the primary one, because in that case, Mr. Pella...
We've heard what you have to say about that. That's why I ask you if there are any other ones.
No. But I do believe that the facts are very different in Pella.
How do you respond to counsel's argument that the legislature must be happy with the court's construction of the statute in Pella because it's amended the statute on more than one occasion since 1980 and didn't change this language?
Well... There have been times when the legislature has amended the witness tampering and witness intimidation statutes, and it's included in an explicit statement of intent as to why, when they're responding
to
cases.
Yeah, but they didn't amend official proceeding, and Pella was, we're to assume that the legislature knew that the Pella court had defined it that way, and they didn't change the definition.
That's correct. They didn't, but it's, you know, my point is only that there have been other times that they have included an explicit statement of intent they didn't hear.
We have a legion of cases that say that the legislature is presumed to be familiar with the court's decisions, and when they don't change a statute after the court construes it, they're presumed to have acquiesced in that construction. Why doesn't that carry the day here?
Well, I think it's one of their best arguments, but, you know, I think, as I've argued, and I understand you want me to, you know, in my mind, Pella is distinguishable, and if Pella is distinguishable, then you don't get there to whether or not Pella was incorrect.
Well, you would distinguish no official proceeding, but as Judge Dwyer pointed out, Pella also says when a criminal proceeding begins, and it says it begins with the filing of an information. And you want to tell us that that's not right, but doesn't that also require us to ignore Pella?
If I could just briefly respond, no, because I believe that holding is tied to the facts of Pella. And in Pella, there was no reason for that defendant to believe that there would be a witness in an official proceeding, unlike Mr. Rogers, who was sitting in jail.
So it appears that the facts of this case were that the Mr. Rogers was in jail. The incident was May 10th through May 11th, basically over midnight of 2012. The date of the alleged witness tampering was the 11th through the 15th, but it's clear that it was on the 11th.
The complaint was filed. The 15th?
The complaint was filed on the 15th, which is the same day as the probable cause finding.
And the testimony at trial, was it clear?
Yeah.
That what day it was that the critical, as far as the state was concerned, conversation took place? So what day was that?
The 11th, absolutely. Later in the day, later the same day of the arrest, actually.
So. Counsel tells us he was arrested, he's in jail, he knows that he's got a court appearance coming up.
Right.
What day was he arrested?
The 11th, the same day.
Okay, and that's the day that the conversation took place.
That's correct.
So why isn't she right that he knows he has a court appearance coming up?
That's not the standard under the statute.
Isn't the court, was an actual court appearance, right?
Right.
There were judges and flags?
I'm sorry.
And people stood up. I mean, is that what happened? It was one of those?
Which was? On the 15th?
No, the first appearance.
The first appearance.
The first appearance. I don't know when the first appearance was. I don't know.
No, it would be after the 11th, right?
Right.
And it was set by the 11th. He knew what she's telling us.
I don't.
That it was set by the 11th.
He knew
he had something where there was going to be people sitting up high and flags and formality. And wouldn't that be a form? Isn't that something formal, and why wouldn't that fit?
That doesn't track the notice of the statute. Whether he thought something would happen has nothing to do with
it. No, whether he knew whether something, in fact, was going to happen. There was, in fact, a hearing set up.
I don't know. That's not in the record.
Well, isn't there a court rule that requires that he be brought before a judicial officer within a certain number of days after
48 hours for probable cause.
So we know from the court rule that as long as everybody was following the law, he had a court proceeding that would occur within 48 hours of his arrest.
Right, and I think that's...
Okay, and that proceeding could be called an official proceeding, could it not?
That's correct.
Okay, so why isn't there an official proceeding pending at the time he makes the phone call?
There's nothing in the record to indicate other than he thinks there's going to be an official proceeding,
well,
Your Honor.
Well, I say there's nothing in the record, but we have his conversation with...
That he thinks there's going to be a hearing.
Well, we also have he's
pretty, there's going to be one. Well, and he's more definitive than he thinks. I mean, his language is more definitive than that.
Right. Well, it's not his first rodeo, Your Honor. but that doesn't tell us. Well, it doesn't tell us whether there's an official. That has nothing to do what he thinks.
Like the North Dakota case.
Yes, we're back to North Dakota,
which is dispositive.
His statutory rights for there not to be an official proceeding within 48 hours of his arrest.
Right, which was after the call was made. And to go back to, I think we have to parse carefully what the state is saying, that he knows there might be a hearing.
I think the state's distinguishing Pella on the basis that Mr. Pella wasn't in jail, so there wasn't a mandatory official proceeding required to occur within 48 hours of his behavior. Whereas for Mr. Rogers, that was true.
May I?
Yes, you may.
Respond? Well, there's also a bright line rule from Pella that says what an official proceeding is, and we have another provision of the statute.
We could read Pella to say that is when one begins when the defendant is not in custody.
One could read it that way. I would not suggest that one do read it that way.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.